This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The Siddur is a very apparent one. We were told, see, I put before you this day a blessing and a curse. If a broche, what is the blessing? That you will listen to the mitzvahs of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the curse, if you will not listen to the mitzvahs, and you will depart from the way which I am instructing you this day, to go after other gods which you do not know. Then there will be the curse. And the question is that there's inconsistency in the two sides. The brocha isn't, if you will not listen, then you will have a brocha. If you will listen, then you will have a brocha. The brocha is, asher tishmu, that you shall listen. But the klola is not that you shall not listen. The curse is, if you will not listen, then you will have a klola. Not everybody asks that question. And we're going to answer that by the use of a medrash on the sedra. Is a very peculiar medrash, as most medrashim are. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, you have to first read right through the medrash and then we'll analyze it. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shimu Li, listen to me, She'ein Odom Shomea Li U'Mafsid, because nobody listens to me and loses. To tell you to listen to me, you can't go wrong listening to me. Rabbonin Amrin, Rabbonin said, At moitze ye shomea li ishtoi masid, ve ye shomea li ishtoi umistaker. Sometimes there is you have a situation where a person, Leonard, you must listen carefully to this. Some people listen to their wives and they lose out. And some people listen to their wives and they do very well by it. Kate said, how, for example, Adam Harishon, the first man, Shomer Ishto, he listened to his wife, the Hipsid, and he lost a lot because of that. Minayin, where do we know? Shneemar Ula Adam Omar, and to Adam God said when he was punishing him, Ki Shomata L'Kol Ishtecha, I'm punishing you because you listened to your wife, not because you ate from the tree, because you listened to your wife, I'm punishing you. And also, obviously, that resulted in him eating from the tree. But the Ribbono Shel Olam stresses, Ki shomata l'kol ishtecha, says the Medrash, that he's punished for listening. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak l'ma'ado v'adoyme, says Rabbi Yitzchak, to what can this be compared? L'melech she'omar l'avdoy, a king says to his servant, Al titoim dover ad she'ovi min amerchitz, says, I don't want you to taste anything, don't eat anything until I come back from my swim. Amar lo ishtoy, his wife says to him, Toim ato tavshil hazeh, taste this dish that I'm cooking, shelo yehem vakish liten l'toicho yehem melech umurai, so that the king won't have to request salt or spices for it, so just you taste and tell me that it's all okay, I'm making it for the king. Bo ha-melech, at that point, his luck, the king walks in, and he sees his lips moving, and he understands he's got something in his mouth. I said, don't eat, and you ate. He said, my master, your servant, your maid servant gave to me. I'm not eating on my own. And to your servant, you listen more than you listen to me. So says the Ribbono Shel Olam to man, "Umeitz hadas toiv v'ra loy toichal mimenu. You shall not eat from the itz hadas. Me osso chavo hechilo. So what did Chava do? She gave him to eat from it. Amar Rabbi Ovin loy biksho el aliv koyisun liyalel olov bekoyla v'ochal mimenu. How did she get him to do it? She just moaned and groaned and cried, and he ate. She kachtiv because it says lekoyl ishtecho, because you listen to the voice of your wife. Doesn't say to her words. Doesn't say because you listened to her words that you heard what she said and you agreed. No, lekoil, just the sound of her voice made you eat. For that you're punished. Did you eat from the tree that I told you not to eat from? He said, Maria, and he answered the same way, my master, it's your servant gave it to me. From where do we know? It says, the woman which you gave me, after all, you gave her to me to help me serve you. And she gave me this to eat, right? Do you listen to Chava over and above listening to me? Miyad Mitrad, immediately he was destroyed and he was disturbed and taken out and sent out of the Gan Eden. So there we have an example of somebody who listened to his wife and he lost out. And we have somebody who listened to his wife and he did very well out of it. That was Avraham. From where do we know? Because it says, "Batoimer Sorai el Avrom," and Sorai said to Avrom, "Hinei no otzroni Hashem miledes. Ribbono Shalom has stopped me from the ability to give birth. Bono el shibchasi, marry please my servant, my maid servant. Ulai ibone mimeno, perhaps I can build a family through her." Vayishmo Avrom lekul Sorai, and Avrom listened to the voice of Sarai. This can be compared to a man who has a son. A certain astrologist saw the sun. Omar, and he said, "Zanar osid li yis archilisti. This child is going to become the chief robber. What he needs from his father is to be kicked out of the house. That's what he needs. So the father heard me, said, "Am I going to kick my son out of the house?" Shoma Omir Shavosa Astrologus, the astrologist's father heard this, Omar, and he said, "Kol ma she'omer lechem b'ni shimule. Whatever my son told you to do, you should do." Kach in the same way, Roso Soro li Yishmoel yotzei letarbus ro. Soro saw, she observed Yishmoel going on a bad way. V'hoiso emeris lo le'avrom, and she said to Avrom, "Garish yisoh ma'azis bez b'no. Chase out this maidservant and her son." The hero loy, and it was bad for Avram. He didn't want to do it. Niglo Olav Hakadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam, came to him. Omale, and he said, "Al yero beinecho, al anar v'anamosecho. Don't feel bad in your eyes about the boy and the maidservant. Kol asher toimer erecho, Sora shema bekeila. Whatever Sora tells you, listen to her. Shama bekeila. He listened to her voice. Then he stuck here, and he was rewarded. Shenikro zaro lishmoi shenitchu, because his seed was all called after Yitzchak and took on the characteristics of Yitzchak. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, God, if somebody who listens to his wife can be rewarded so handsomely, can you imagine how much you're rewarded if you listen to me? It's the Medrash. So the difficulty started at the back. It's a funny Kal Vachomer. Because if you listen to a human being, you get rewarded. How much more so if you listen to God? Difficult to understand. Secondly, what's the comparison with the astrologist? What's the Midrash trying to say with the story of the astrologist? And thirdly, why doesn't God say to Avraham, whatever Sora tells you, do? Why does he say, listen to her voice? And fourthly, it also uses the same words that it uses with Chava, listen to her voice. And the Medrash learned from that Chava cried and wailed, and that's what he listened to. That's how she moved him. And fifthly, the second half of the Medrash starts off bringing the example from Lech Lecha, where Sora recommends that Avraham marry Hagar, and it says Vayishma Avram lekol Sarai, and Avram listened to the voice of Sarai and married Hagar. And then it goes on to the whole story of the astrologist, which is connected with the story in Vayera where Sarai says kick Hagar out. They're two different cases. And in the first example, why the whole story of the woman making the food and asking the husband to taste it? What's the purpose of that moshul? What does the Midrash wish to convey? So we need to start towards the end of the Medrash and understand the principle, and then we'll be able to work backwards. What does it mean to listen to the voice of somebody? Lishmaya b'koyloya b'koyla. There's a very beautiful Ramban on that case in Lech Lecha, where Sarai says to Avram, you should marry Hagar. Vatoimer Sarai el Avram, hineino atzoroni Hashem miledes. Hashem has made it impossible for me to give birth. Boino el shivchosi. Come now to my maidservant, ulai ibono mimeno. Maybe I shall build from her. Vayishma Avram lekul Sarai. And Avram listened to the voice of Sarai. Says the Ramban. Loi omar hakosuv vayas kein. The Torah doesn't say, and he did so. It just says he listened to her voice. It doesn't say he did so. Aval omar ki shoma lekul Sarai. It just says that he listened to the voice of Sarai. Yirmuz, that implies. Even though Avram craved very much to have children, loy also kein beloy rishus Sarai. He did not do this without the permission of Sarai. Unless he was satisfied that that's what Sarai wanted, he would not do it. I've got a word rubbed out here. Can we just bring another Ramban brashis from the green Chumashim possibly? When one's working with a Rishon, one has to be very careful with each word. And even though one has seen it several times before, each time one learns a Rishon, one notices things that one didn't notice before, and one can't afford to miss out a word. The gam ato, and also now, lo niskaven shiyibone hu mehagar. His intention was not that he should build a family through Hagar. The yiye zaroi mimeno, that his seed should be from Hagar. That was not his intention. Aval kol kavanosoi lasois ritzoin soro. His entire intention was to carry out the will of his wife, Sarah. That's all. Shitibone mimeno shiyiye lo nachas ruach bivnei shivchoso. So as to give her the nachas of her, the children that would be brought into the home through the shivcho. That that's what she wants. She would rather have children of Hagar in the home than have no children at all. And because Sarah wants it, that's why you'll do it. Oizchush shitiski ilabonim bavur kein. Or like Chazal say, because she felt that by doing that she would be able to maybe have children later on. Says the Ramban, what is the pshat in Vayishma Bekoilo, that Avram listened to her voice? Vayishma Avram Lekoil Soroi. That Avram listened to the voice of Sarai, says the Ramban, that means that his motivation was only the voice of Sarai. It wasn't his own craving that motivated him to do it. It wasn't his own desire or his own ambition that motivated him to do it. There was no intention on his part that this would be the end in itself. He had one motivation, Kol Sarai. What does she really want? That's what I'll do. The Sipurnu makes the same comment with slightly different words. Noto levovoi shiyiye dato amiti. He applied his heart to make sure that that was her true intention, that she really wanted that. Lefichach kibel dvoreha. When he was satisfied that that deep down in her subconscious as well as in her conscious is what she really wanted, kibel dvoreha, he accepted her words. Loyelis aneg b'mishgal ha'isha. Not to have the pleasure of another wife. That's not what he had in mind. Lekol Sarai, he did it only in listening to the voice of Sarai. So So we see, according to the Ramban already, what it means to listen to the voice of someone, not to the words. Listen to the words, you're listening to a thought which they have put together in a way that they want you to understand. When you're listening to the voice, l'koil, you're listening to the deepest intentions of the person, what he really wants. That's what it means. And we see that Avram is able to perceive the deep intentions and desires of his wife and to act and to respond to those desires. Yet later on, when Sarai says, throw out the maidservant and her son, then he's upset that he doesn't want to do. And it's only because the Ribbono Shel'Olam comes along and says, whatever Sarai has told you to do, you shall do. That's the case in Vayera. Vayera adova ma'id b'ene Avram, and Avram found this very hard, very bad, aloidez b'noi, because of his son. And only because Vayomer Elokim el Avram, Hashem said to Avram, al yero b'enecho al anar v'al amosecha, do not feel bad in your eyes about the nar and the maidservant. Whatever Sora tells you, shma bekoilo, listen to her voice. It doesn't say do as she says. Shma bekoilo, listen to her voice. And Rashi says, shma bekoilo bekol ruach hakodesh shebo. Listen deep down and you'll find that there's ruach hakodesh, there's nevuah, there's prophecy in her words. Why does God not say whatever Sarah tells you, do? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want Avram to do it because he's figured out that it's right. He doesn't want Avram to do it because God has instructed him to do it. He wants Avram to do it because that is the Rotzin of Sarai, of Sarah, and Sarah is a Nevi'ah. That's why. Because she wants it and she knows what she's talking about. And you do it for her. So we have two cases here with Avram. One case where he willingly applies himself and responds to the desires of his wife in the depth of all their expression, and one case where he's not willing to do so until the Ribbono Shel Olam tells him that he's got to, because she is a Nevi'ah. The case of the astrologist the Medrash brings is the father of the astrologist says, whatever my son tells you, you shall do, for listen to him. Why must you listen to him? Because you can accept it? Because you can agree with it? No, because of his authority. He's a practiced astrologist and he's never gone wrong. You would be crazy not to listen to him. Says the Medrash, in God's instruction to Avram to listen to Sarah, there's the intention that he should listen to her in her stature as a Nevi'ah. Let's look at the first case, the case of Adam and Chava. What went wrong there? Before that, why did Avram not want to listen to the words of Sarah? When Sarah said, chase out the Amor and the child, why did Avram not listen? Just because he was attached as a father to a son, that's not shaykh with Avram Avinu. If that was the correct thing to do, he would have done it. So why didn't he listen? Because he believed she was asking him to do something which was against the halacha. He believed that what she was asking, yes, it's her deepest desire and that's what she wants, but it's not in accordance with the Torah. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, listen to her because she's a Nevi'ah. Comes Chava and puts an argument to Adam. The argument is recorded in the Medrash in Bereishis. She tells him, firstly, I've eaten already. So I'm going to, now what do you think is going to happen exactly? Do you think I'm going to die? And if I die, then where are you going to get another chava? Do you think God's going to just make another one from magic? After the Sheshis in Bereishis says chava, nothing more is going to be created. I'm the only one. Any future woman is going to be created through a union between the two of us. So what do you think? God's going to take me and bring you another wife? No such luck. That's not going to happen. What else do you think? That I'm going to die and you're just going to stay on your own like some majestic lone figure? Loitov ro la sheves yitzor. The Ribbono Shel Olam created the world because he wanted it populated and he wanted it possessed by human beings. His intention was not that there should be one Odom and never anything more than that. So what's the obvious thing? You have to eat as well. We've both got to be in the same boat. And then the Midrash says that she began to cry and she began to moan and groan, and that's when he gave in. What's wrong? So the Midrash brings the story of the Shifcha, where the man says to the king, you know, it's true you told me not to eat, but I ate only in your service, not for any of my own enjoyment. I didn't eat because I felt like eating. I didn't taste it because it was delicious. On the contrary, I was the guinea pig, just to save you from being the guinea pig. Your servant, she works for you. She's preparing your meal. She's the one who asked me to taste in order that you should have a better meal. So surely that doesn't contradict your initial instruction that I shall not eat. He says, the king, listening to her is wrong. Tasting the food, alright, that's not serious. You've justified it, you've explained it. But that you chose to listen to her against an explicit instruction of mine, that not. When we don't know what the halacha is, because no halacha has been stated, then one can use the philosophy and understanding of the halacha to apply it. But where there's a clear statement of what the din is, then one can't mess around with one's own logic and one's own philosophy to try and change it. The Ribbono Shel Olam said, "Me'etzadas lo teichal," you may not eat from it. Whatever argument Chava puts before you is not an argument that is worthy of changing that halacha. That halacha can't be changed. It's in the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's your very own servant who did it. That doesn't matter. It's not possible to alter the integrity of that particular halacha. What have we got? A situation where even between a man and a wife, and not just ordinary man and wife, we're talking about people like Odom and Chava, Sora and Avram, great of the great. It can't be assumed that whatever the wife says is correct. Can't be assumed. It has to be analyzed. And what happens if she has a tremendous need for something? She really has, but the husband feels that it's not right. What does he have to do? He can't say, Ribbono Shel Olam, you gave me this wife with all her pros and cons and with all her advantages and disadvantages and with all her needs and cravings, and if she needs it, I've got to supply what she needs. No. There's a time when he has to say, no, I'm sorry, what you're asking is against the Torah, that's all. Can't do it. That there is no relationship, not even the relationship between Adam le'ishtoi, between a man and his wife, which is so trustworthy that one does not have to analyze before one responds. No relationship. One might think that at least in that relationship one doesn't have to analyze before one responds. No, says the Midrash, even there. Yesh sheshomea le'ishtoi. Some people listen to their wives and they gain, some people listen to their wives and they lose. The fact that she needs, the fact that she wants, the fact that she said, that's not enough of a reason. Now what's all that got to do with the Ribbono Shel Olam? Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says God, Shimu li she'ein odom shomea li umafsi. When it comes to listening to me, it's not possible to listen to me and to lose. There's only one relationship where one can rest assured that whatever you're hearing, as long as you understand it, it's Shomea Bekul, you've got to listen to God's voice. As long as you understand meticulously and precisely what the Ribbono Shel Olam is asking of us, that's the only time we can rest relaxed. Don't have to worry. It's good, it's right, it's correct. We don't have to analyze. Again, in the example that the Midrash brings, when one's dealing with servants who have superiors, one always has to query whether what the servant is requesting is in accordance with his superior's wishes. There was a case, I think it was the Chofetz Chaim, who was very late for a train and he came running, and the porter took his baggage to put in the baggage van, and he said, where do I go to buy a ticket for the baggage? And the porter said, don't worry, let the train just go already, go without a ticket, get on. And the Chatzchaim said, who are you to be moichel your balabos's money? You're an employee. What are you authorized to decide who pays and who doesn't pay? Or is it your business just to collect a ticket from everyone? Most people, if you'll find such a clerk who says, don't worry, you don't have to pay. Wonderful. That's not a good thing. Each time one has to query whether he's authorized to do such a thing. And it's funny how in some areas we're so meticulous about that, and in some areas we're not. If you'll sign a big contract with a company, you'll go to a lot of effort to ensure that the person who signs it is authorized to sign it. Yet if you'll go somewhere and the cashier won't have the right change, she said, don't worry, it doesn't matter, there you won't say, are you authorized to make that contract? That means to write off the 2 cents that I still owe this company. You don't think about that. Of course she's entitled to. If it's to my advantage, she's entitled to. If it's not to my advantage, I must check whether she's entitled to. That's how we work. When everyone's dealing with a junior, that's what this medrash means. You can't go to the balabos and say, but your employee said it was all right. Can't you use your seichel to realize that he or she is not authorized to say that it's all right? That I'm the balabos? What right have you, Odom, got to listen to my servant, Chava, as great as she is, when you know that it's going against my own will? And even Avram, when he listened to Sarah, it was only because the Ribbono Shel Olam said, whatever she tells you, say, because she's a Nevi'ah, even though it appears to you to go against the halacha. When you're dealing with the balabos, there's nothing to worry about. And there again, in all dealings, it's one of the pleasures in dealing with the balabos. Everybody likes it. Because you know that you can negotiate. You know that there's no, the Japanese are absolute masters at this. You go out of your way to make sure that you're dealing with a balabos as far as possible, because in Japan it's difficult to know who's the balabos. And they tell you yes. And you sit and you negotiate, and they ask you questions, and days go on. And when you're finished and you feel that you've really won them over, and you say, well, can we sign tomorrow? I said, tomorrow we bring in our superiors. They've got to give the rubber stamp. Okay. Comes tomorrow, the whole business again from scratch, with a whole new group of people. Now these ones sit behind, and then a new team is sitting in front. And these taki look like balabati. They run the whole affair in a completely different way, and now you're feeling better. It goes, and they put you through the same grilling. Comes the end of it, they say, yeah, they're very impressed. Tomorrow we'll meet with their superiors. And so it goes on and on and on and on. When one's dealing with a balabos, one can relax. You know he's authorized. You know one can negotiate. You understand that what he says, he means, and that he's enabled and entrusted to say that. One of the beauties of the Torah is that we're able to deal with the Ribbono Shel Olam directly. That's the beauty. That we don't need any pikidim, we don't need any clerks, whom we then have to doubt whether what they're saying is really what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants or not. We don't need. That's the bracha. Says the Torah. Es ha-brocha. What is the bracha? The bracha is Asher tishmu el mitzvahs Hashem elokeichem. That you are able to hear the mitzvahs directly from the balabos. That's the bracha. That you can sit relaxed and calm, you don't have to worry, is he authorized, is what he's saying against the Torah or not against the Torah? He is the Torah. And you as an ordinary poshuti yid have the most unbelievable bracha that you can sit at the Ribbono Shel Olam's feet and you can hear whatever he wants you to do. How do you do that? Asher tishmu el mitzvahs Hashem elokeichem, asher which Anoichi mitzave eschem hayom, says Moshe. The mitzvahs which I am telling you today. Aren't we back to a pakid? Aren't we back to a clock? Now we have to trust Moshe Rabbeinu. So that, yes. We discussed in the ladies' shiur today the difference between a chochem and a talmid chochem. When we talk of secular geniuses, we talk about them as chachomim. Oh, big chachomim. And we mean it in a complimentary way. When we talk about wise people in Torah, we talk about talmidei chachomim. Why? Because when a chochem says something, all you can say is, that it's brilliant, you don't know whether it's right or not. That's not possible. What is said with a great conviction today is discarded tomorrow. What was said beyond all doubt, and that's all reasonable doubt. Lawyers work with reasonable doubt. Scientists work with no doubt. Absolutely no doubt. That's how it is. And what was beyond all doubt yesterday is completely cast aside today. We don't hold like that anymore. It was ingenious yesterday, and the new theory is ingenious today. That's Chochmah. The wisdom of it, yes. But the accuracy, the emiskite of it, who knows? Might be, might not be. We don't know. When it comes to a Talmid Chochem, it's different. Does he have to be a genius? No. You'll never find in all the definitions of a Talmid Chochem in the Gemara, none will talk about his IQ. It's obvious that he can't be a Talmid Chochem if he's an idiot. But nowhere does it require that he must have a super intelligence to be a Talmid Chochem. It'll talk about his midas, it'll talk about his integrity, it'll talk about the degree to which he's able to control himself, as we had in the Vilna Gaon earlier this evening. The Talmid Chochem is a person who can change his nature, who can master his nature to the extent where he can make natural that which was previously not natural to him. That kind of definition you'll find of a Talmid Chochem. Because a Talmid Chochem's business is to pass over what he learns from his master. A Talmid says, look, I'm only a Talmid Chochem, I'm not a Chochem. But my Rebbe was a Chochem. So I won't tell you what I know, because there's nothing in it. I'll tell you what my Rebbe taught me. That's a Talmid Chochem. We've discussed many times that that doesn't mean that the Talmid Chochem is not creative. Of course he's creative, but he's creative within a framework where he's absolutely satisfied that it subjects itself to the integrity of that which his Rabbeim would have taught. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down and he says, you have access directly to the mitzvahs. Through who? Through the mitzvahs which I'm telling you today. You can listen to the Ribbono Shel Olam, but it's through Moshe Rabbeinu. That's how we listen, that's how we learn. There's a lot of confusion in the world today. And the confusion, I'm talking even in the Torah world, in the religious world, the confusion is caused by many things. But one of the things which causes the confusion is lack of clarity at what the Ribbono Shel Olam is saying. Well, it is. You have a lot of tmimus dikei people who say, if I knew for sure that's what God wanted of me, I would do it. But who says it is, and do I understand it properly, and so on and so forth. That lack of clarity is a little bit of apikursus also. It's a little bit of, what's a good word for apikursus? Sorry? Heresy. That confusion in itself is heretic. There's a beautiful sipun right at the beginning of the Sedra, which Rabbi Tindler actually pointed out to me. Habito ure'ei. What does re'ei mean? Look, see, says the sipunu, that means habito. Look, perceive, take care. Sheloi yiye in yoncho al oifen beinuni k'mo shehu haminag barov. Don't let your matters be decided on a basis of compromise, beinuni, in between, as is normally the minag. That's neither this nor that. It's somewhere parve in the middle. For I, Anochi Nosein Lifneichem Ayoyim, I'm giving you today Brocha Uklolo. I'm giving you two things, not a whole grey area in between. I'm giving you Brocha, blessing, and kiss. Vehem Shnei Haktzovos, and those are two extremes. Ki HaBrocha, what does Brocha mean? We have a definition in the Sipuna what Brocha means. Hi HaTzlocha Yosei Min HaMaspik Atzada Yosei Tzoyf. If you take for yourself what your real needs are, even generously you consider yourself as to what your needs are, brocha is when you have more than that. That's brocha. And klola, klola hi ma'aro mechaseres shelo yusak ha-maspik. And klola is when chas v'sholom one hasn't got what one needs. Those are the definitions, and they're two extremes. Ushnehem lifneichem lahasik. And there's nothing in between, really. The person has got exactly what he needs. That's really not shaykh. You've either got more than you need, because the boundary line of what you need is not somewhere where you can just say, that's it, that's exactly what I need. So one is either in the area of bracha, one either has got more than one needs, or one has got less than one needs. Ushneim lifneichem, both of those are before you lasik, you can achieve either one. Kefi mashe tivchuru, whichever you choose, it's up to you. You can choose bracha, you can choose plodah. What does this mean? That the bracha, when it says the bracha is that you have the ability to listen to what the Ribbono Shel'olam's will directly, that is the bracha. That you can hear with clarity what God wants, and you don't have to worry, does it go against what the superior says? You don't have to worry such a thing. How do you achieve that? Says the Sipur no Mashi Tivchuru. That's Bechira, you've got to choose that. Part of this confusion that we've been discussing is caused by people not believing that you can't lose by trusting the Ribbono Shel'olam. That's where the apikursos comes in. And therefore, they start weighing up. If that's what God really means, then it looks like I'm going to be in for some trouble. So let's look again. Maybe that isn't quite what God means. And we try again. And we look at that and we say, ah, then I'm at least I'm out of that trouble. But if that's what God means, it's going to be jolly tough. It's going to need a lot of work on my part. Let's learn it through once more. Maybe that's not quite what the Ribbono Shel'olam means. And then one twists and twists and twists until one doesn't know what the Ribbono Shel'olam wants from one at all. The first thing has to be the Bechira. There has to be a decision before one starts learning. There has to be a decision before one listens to a shir. There has to be a decision before one opens a sefer. What the Ribbono Shel'olam wants of me, ain, how does the Medrash put it? She'ain odom shomea liyu mafsik. That has to be inculcated into our subconscious minds. That you can't listen to the Ribbono Shel'olam and lose. Once you know that, there's no tendency to distort what the Ribbono Shel'olam says. You start off with the assumption that once I know what he says, I can't lose. There can be a short-term setback, yes. It can require a little bit of mesiras nefesh in the short term, yes. It can appear terribly difficult for Avraham to have to take his wife and child and send them off into the desert. Can one imagine how difficult that was? En shomea liyu mafsid. You've got to know, Avraham Avinu, in the long term, nobody loses by listening to the Ribbono Shel'olam. Ki beYitzchok ki korei shimcha. If you wouldn't have done that, the Arabs and the Jews would have been one race today. Can you imagine what a mess we would have been? That would have been. There would have been no distinction between Arab and Jew. Because Avraham did it, as difficult as it was, he lands up separating it. The Yiddish people come out pure as descendants of Yitzchok and not as descendants of Yishmael. Ein shomea liyu mafsi. There's no such thing as listening to the Ribbono Shel'olam and losing. But that has to be a bechira. That has to be a choice which is made. And one finds inevitably that once that choice is made with clarity, and one's only intention now is to find out what is it that the Ribbono Shel'olam wants, it's very easy. One has the Torah Asher Anochi Metzavcho, one has the Torah Shebichtav, one has the Torah Shebaal Peh, one has Torah which has been handed down from generation to generation. One can go into a matter, whether it's a halacha. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer to achieve the clarity, sometimes it's a little bit quicker. Whether it's a hashkofa, an attitude to something that has to be analyzed, what is the correct attitude, what is the correct mode of behavior, a question of midas. All these things, if one approaches it with the correct attitude, which is simply, in shomea liyu mafsid, I'm satisfied that when I know what's right, I can't lose. Now what's right? Then it's very easy to be able to do it. Part of the reason for which the confusion has become so easy is because of the extent to which the Jewish people have been thrown together over the last 40 years. And the rapidity of communications. In the old times, if a person grew up in a town, he probably seldom went out of the town. So what was his exposure to Torah? He had very few sforim, because in those days they didn't print very much. So he had a Chumash, and he had a Tanakh, and he had a Mishnayos, and he had a Shas, and he had a Shulchan Aruch and a Rambam if he was lucky, and a Yerushalmi if he was very lucky, and a couple of other important Rishonim he might have had, and that was it. And who did he have? He had the Rov in his town. The Rov was at his bris, and the Rov was at his chasana, and the Rov was at his parents' levaya nevech, and the Rov has been that's his contact with her. There's no confusion. That's how it is. He has an approach, he has a way of understanding it, and that approach is the same approach as his great grandparents had, because who was the Rov in the time of his great grandparents? It was the Rov's father was the Rov in those days. And where did this Rav learn? From his father. And where did my great-grandfather learn? From this Rav's father. And my great-great-great-grandfather learned from his grandfather. And so it went back. A certain straight consistency. If he went to another town and he saw people doing differently, holding differently, no, it didn't shake him up. With the situation as we have it today, with the speed of communication and the extent of travel and the way that people are thrown together from different backgrounds, it becomes easy to use confusion as a justification to do what you want. One can confuse to the point where you can, through the dim haze, you can imagine the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam to take any form that you've really decided it should take. Now, it is, if you look through hazes, how the imagination can work. When there's a haze, anything's possible. When there's clarity, it's clarity. And this is one of the things that we've stressed many times in the Beis HaMedrash, and one of the things that need to be stressed over and over again. Somebody from outside the community asked whether they could come and attend the shiur which Rabbi Tendler will be giving to the ladies tomorrow at 1:00. And I said, yes, but who's your Rav? So she told me. So I said, you'd better check with your Rav that he doesn't mind. Because I know who her Rav is, and I know that he follows a very different system. But it didn't enter her mind that there could be any confusion. So she'll go here and she'll hear a little bit here. She'll go to her Rav and she'll hear something else. And she'll go to a third Rav, who she mentioned she also runs around to sometimes, and hear something still different. And then put the three together in a way which comes out, in a way which makes most sense to her. And one thing is left for sure, and that is that isn't the Torah anymore. That's already a mess up. One has to understand that there are certain drachim, and as long as one is faithful to a derech, it's not that important which derech it is. There are a lot of different shivim ponim l'Torah. The Torah has all many, many different approaches to it, and as long as each approach is based on a genuine Kabbalah, on a tradition which has been handed down from generation to generation, it's not that critical which one it is, as long as it's one which is in accordance with one's own background and tradition as far as possible. This that we have Rabbi Tendler with us over the coming week is not just because he happens to be an expert in the field of medical ethics. For that reason alone, I wouldn't have brought him out, because there can be confusion. You can bring a person out who's an expert in medical ethics, but his masoris is different to ours. His way of paskening is different. His way of approaching halacha is different. His way of approaching a major issue is different. The reason that we brought Rabbi Tendler out is because he comes from that Masoris, he comes from that tradition. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, his father-in-law, is today the Posek, one of the very, very few of the great international Poskim who follow that, the Litvish Derech from which we all come. Therefore, one has to be able to listen to him with an understanding that one's listening to something which has its roots in that tradition and that background of Torah to which we're used and which we are able to identify. Not only with his visit, but one has to understand that always. The differences that one encounters in the interpretation of Yiddishkeit can all be legitimate, provided one understands their source, and provided one understands their Masoris, one understands their tradition, and provided one understands one's own and how they can be, how they relate to one another. As long as there's a mixing, there's not only confusion, but there's also fear, because one fears adulteration. And as long as there's a mixing of different shittas, there's fear and there's antagonism. When there's clarity as to different shittas and to different derochim and to different backgrounds, one can afford the luxury of respecting a person who disagrees with one, because one knows that his background is as authentic as our background, and that he's saying what he's saying based on the Kabbalahs he's had from his Rabbeim. It just so happens that his Rabbeim are different to our Rabbeim. doesn't matter, it doesn't shake anybody up. And that way one can build up a mutual respect to the community one for another without it coming into any situation of unpleasant feelings. This is something we're coming now to the beginning of Elul, and we've got to start looking over the coming year what we can do to, over the coming weeks, what we can adopt for ourselves over the coming year as an area in which we can concentrate a little bit. And the area of clarity, I think, is one of them. Something that one has to look at in everything that one thinks, and everything that one says, and everything that one hears. Do I understand clearly what it says? That's all. I have a question on it? Good. I have a question. You don't have to have a sleepless night if you have a question. You have to have a sleepless night if you don't know what it says, if you're confused. And at least to try and develop that kind of clarity, to question oneself with brutal honesty, do I understand exactly what was said? Do I understand exactly what's written? Do I understand exactly what I'm saying? Can somebody else understand exactly what I'm saying? To try and develop that clarity and to make sure that in that clarity there is reliability. That if one's saying something or if one's understanding something, it's something that one can depend on, it's something that one can rely on. Whether one is the speaker or one is the listener. If one is the speaker, one must put in a great deal of effort to ensure that the listener is entitled to rely on what I'm saying. And if one is the listener, one must be satisfied that one can rely on what one is hearing. Otherwise, one should turn off altogether. There's no point in listening to it. Perhaps over the coming weeks, we'll look at aspects where this clarity can be developed.